Hi again, and welcome to the Amerinds Podcast. It's episode 110 for Tuesday, August 26th, 2008. And it's time again for political chat as the Democratic Convention gets underway. And joining me again is my co-host, Jason.
Hello. Hello from Washington, D.C.
And Monday, for that matter.
Monday, yes. Monday evening at 8:12.
Yes, I'm talking to the past.
And I'm talking to the future.
Woo!
So, yes, And in some ways, since we're having a political discussion, it does seem sort of fitting, doesn't it?
That I'm talking to the past?
And that I'm talking to the future, yes. Gosh, it's very allegorical for the two candidates running for the... anyway, we can get into that later.
Yes. Well, of course, the Democratic Convention is getting underway, and the Republican Convention is the following week. And so what we've decided to do is that for the next couple of Tuesdays, we're going to come back for more political chats. The first one, well, obviously today we're going to talk about a bit about the upcoming Democratic Convention. We're also going to talk a bit about the differences between the two parties from a listener request. And then the following week, next week, a week from today, we're going to be talking, sort of do a wrap-up of the Democratic Convention. And a week after that...
And then we'll have to talk about the Republicans.
Exactly. Yeah. We'll lead into what's coming up with the Republicans, and then the following week we will do a wrap-up with the Republicans, and we're also going to talk about the two parties' platforms as they end up adopting them, whatever they end up being. We'll see.
Yes.
But I actually would, before we get too much into the Democratic Convention, I would actually like to talk a little bit about the differences between the two parties, and this comes from listener Edis, who was asking, as a non-American, basically what the differences are between the two. And I'd actually like to go back a little bit further from where they are now to talk about where they were, because I think it's fair to say that the parties as they existed when we were growing up are very different from the way they are now, or at least the Republicans are. Probably the Democrats,
yes,
too, I suppose. But certainly, in the olden days, prior to Ronald Reagan, the Republican Party was primarily the party of limited government, of what was sometimes called states' rights, although that was a loaded phrase, but essentially what that meant is that the states should decide for themselves how to manage the affairs, and the federal government shouldn't get involved. There were probably social conservatives who were involved in the Republican Party in those days, but social issues were not a major concern of the Republican Party, certainly. On the other hand, the Democrats tend to favor bigger government, and particularly in certain areas like social welfare. Going back to the New Deal in the Roosevelt administration through to the New Frontier, the Kennedy administration, and what the heck was Johnson's called? It's just left me. Great Society.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of really innovative programs came out of Democratic administrations. I mean, the whole welfare system originated during FDR's New Deal. And then during the Johnson administration, he tried to wage war on poverty. And the food stamp program was initiated, which... at the time had been regarded as the most successful welfare program in American history.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Of course, welfare has changed since then, and actually it was a Democratic president that started the process, there was a Democrat who was president when the process of reining that in started, but that was after the Republicans had sort of changed the whole landscape of everything.
Right.
So getting back to what I was talking about, essentially, I grew up, of course, as Jason well knows, in a Republican household. Both my parents were Republicans, and we just routinely supported Republicans. And in university, I was active in what I think it's still called College Republicans, which nowadays is apparently even more conservative than the real party. I shouldn't call it real party because I hated it when people did that back then. We called it the senior party back then.
Right.
But it wasn't in those days, because in those days, university students were university students, and we tended to be a bit more...
liberal?
Yeah, basically. Because I came from the liberal wing of the Republican Party, which doesn't exist anymore to speak of, but it was like Chuck Percy in Illinois, Nelson Rockefeller, who else? Jacob Javits. I can't think of any others off the top of my head. But even George Bush I was originally... form the more moderate wing of the Republican mm-hmm. Party, and he only moved to the right when he was Ronald Reagan's running mate. But I was running, I actually ran across an old journal entry the other day where I'd gone to the state convention for the College Republicans in Illinois. This would have been about...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it would have been about 79, I think. And I made some notes about things we did, and the Federation wanted to, as it was called, wanted to pass, the delegates wanted to pass a resolution opposing the Equal Rights Amendment. This is how long ago this was. And I opposed that. I wanted them to, I knew that I couldn't get them to endorse the Equal Rights Amendment, but I wanted them to not take a position. Well, I lost on that. Right. And they also wanted what they called a student right to work law, which, because Illinois is basically, was, and I think still is, a pretty anti-union state as far as state law goes. But they wanted a law specifically exempting students, university students, from any sort of compulsory unionization where it was voted in. And I was opposed to that as well and lost on that. So I was a troublemaker even then, I guess.
Yes.
But anyway, what I was leading up to was that for me, the turning point came in the 1980 election when it became obvious that Ronald Reagan was going to be the nominee. And I couldn't stand Ronald Reagan then, now, or ever. And I instead backed John Anderson in the Republican primaries, who was a congressman from Rockford, Illinois at that time. And Jason was involved in that campaign too.
Yes.
And it was actually the first time I think we ever backed the same candidate.
Right. Yes, I remember going to the Republican presidential forum and wherever we went to, and we
Rosemont,
went
Illinois.
In. And, yeah, we went in and shook hands with George and Barbara Bush, and there were like, it was us and them.
Yeah.
And that was, there were like five people in the entire room. I think that's what also has to be said about the parties is that geography played and has played a huge part in sort of the way the parties were formed. And this really kind of dates back to, after the Civil War with Reconstruction. And the Democrats were basically a Southern party who the white males, because only white males were voting then, supported in the South because they weren't the Republicans, because, of course, the Republicans were in power when they lost. And the Republican Party was basically a Midwest and Northeastern power or party. That's sort of where they were based.
Yeah.
And to a certain extent, like the West Coast, like California. And they were very much... it was on the economic end of things. And what essentially happened was you had Johnson come along and you had the Great Society programs, you had the passages of, the Voting Rights Act, and essentially these hardcore Democrats who were extremely conservative started to fall away and become Republicans. And that shifted the geographic center of the Republican Party, and it also shifted the geographic center of the Democratic Party. And in New England and the Mid-Atlantic, the Republican Party essentially is withering, and I think it will continue to wither away. And it's withered to a certain extent in the Midwest, but it's thriving in the South, and it's thriving, well, thriving might not be the right word to describe it in the West anymore. And so there was this shift as the Republican Party became more and more conservative, sort of these liberal areas in the Northeast and moderate areas in the Midwest switched to the Democrats, and that's sort of the shift. And then the Christian conservatives came along, in part, I think, because of a reaction to the 60s, and, you know, the pendulum began to swing the other way, to abortion, to the Equal Rights Amendment, to gay rights, you know, sort of that panoply of issues. And I think you could essentially said that they came along and they captured the control of the Republican Party. And I still think it is the single most powerful constituency that is within the Republican Party, because for a very long time, from Ronnie on, when the Christian conservatives said jump, the Republicans were saying how high. And it's a little bit different. I think they're sort of losing some of their power, I think in part because the Republicans came to power and they did what all parties that come into power do. They try to perpetuate themselves in power, and that runs into the problems of all the things that happen when people try to perpetuate themselves in power. You know, there's scandals and corruption, and, you know, they had this big thing, the contract with America, or as some of us called it, the contract on America,
yeah.
which was, you know, we're going to balance the budget. There are going to be term limits. There's, you know, we're going to shrink the size of government, you know, and then Bill Clinton made this speech, you know, in, I think it was a saying, oh, the era of big government is over. And I'm just thinking like, no, it's not. It's yeah. never going to be over. The era of big government is never going to be over. I mean, the old adage is one man's pork is another man's bacon. And when the Republicans got into power, when, you know, they were the majority, it's just like term limits sort of faded away. You know, oh, well, you know, we're going to cycle people through committee chairmanships. Well, that sort of faded away. But the religious right is an extremely important aspect of
although
the Republicans in the last quarter century or so.
That's certainly true. But the... they can't be taken for granted so much anymore, particularly as a younger group of evangelicals come to the fore, because for them, other issues are as important, in some cases more important than some of the social issues that have long, I don't know, unified the evangelicals. Things like poverty in the third world, fighting climate change, things like that. Mm-hmm. And for some of them, those issues matter more than, say, same-sex marriage or any issues like that. But I think backing up a little bit, it's also worth pointing out that in the olden days, the Republican Party was the party of, I said it was a small government, and that's certainly true, but they were also aligned with business interests primarily, and they were
big business in particular.
Yeah. But they tended to promote in those days a more business-like approach to fiscal policy, which is to say that they didn't want to run deficits, they didn't want to raise taxes, if anything, they'd like to cut them, but cutting taxes was not their core issue. That only changed in relatively recent years, and of course, Bush II has created the most massive deficits in American history and mm-hmm. cut taxes for the rich at the same time, and now John McCain wants to do the same thing all over again. Just like George Bush, he wants to cut taxes for the rich, and he wants to continue running these huge deficits because there obviously will be no way to pay it off if he's cutting taxes.
We'll grow out of it.
Yeah, right. Basically, just wanted to sort of wrap it up by saying that the historic differences between the parties were that the Republican Party was for small government, limited government, fiscal responsibility, wasn't too interested in social policy. If anything, they favored the rights of the individual. And the states, the individual 50 states. But they mm-hmm. weren't interested in things like gay rights, for instance, because they considered that to be a personal matter and not any of the business of the federal government. Whereas the current crop of Republicans, they want to make everything the business of the federal government. They want to control reproduction. They want to control how families are arranged. They want to control who... They basically want to control every aspect of a person's life, and that is not traditional Republican policy.
I've always found sort of interesting is that in recent times they wanted an amendment to the Constitution for just about everything under the sun.
Yeah.
Abortion, the marriage,
school
prayer, just this whole, and it's just like this is the party of small government.
Yeah.
So,
which is ironic because in that sense, the two parties sort of switched because the Democrats want to rein in power. Bill Clinton had balanced budgets, and it's the Democratic Party has sort of, how do I want to put it? They've become focused more on using the power of government to achieve what certainly people in the center or left would consider legitimate state concerns like mm-hmm. reducing poverty, reducing suffering, caring for people who can't care for themselves, those kinds of things as well.
Right.
Which the Republicans want to be left to the private sector, by and large, or faith-based organizations.
Yes.
Neither mm-hmm. which are much interested in actually solving any of these problems, it seems to me. So anyway, I think that's a bit of a background on the historic development of the parties, and I think most people now know that the Republican Party is the conservative party in the U.S., there really is no liberal wing of the Republican Party anymore to speak of.
No.
There are some who are less conservative, but they're all conservatives.
They could fit in a large rumpus room.
Well, I think these days that the caucus of liberal Republicans could hold their meeting in a phone booth, if they could find one.
Yeah. Yes, that's true.
Whereas the Democrats are not as liberal as the Republicans make them out to be. The Democrats are basically a centrist party, but a large part of the Democrats in Congress certainly are slightly right of center, which isn't to say that they're anywhere near as conservative as the average Republican is, just that compared to where they used to be, there are a lot of centrist or center-right Democrats now. There is no true liberal party in America, liberal in the American sense of being left of center.
I would agree with that.
I think a lot of people would like to see a multi-party system, and there are a whole lot of reasons why that is very unlikely to ever develop. But that's a topic for another day, I think, because right now we're in the midst of the epitome of the two-party system, the two conventions.
Yes.
So maybe what we should do is we should just talk a little bit about what these conventions are, what they're for, because there's probably a lot of people who don't really know. I mean, we know that they are coming together, and say in the case of the Democrats, which starts this week, the Democrats are coming today, as a matter of fact. The Democrats are coming to nominate Barack Obama as their presidential candidate and Joe Biden as their vice presidential candidate. And next week, the Republicans will come together to nominate John McCain as their candidate and whoever he picks as his vice presidential running mate.
Which I think we're going to find out on Friday.
Yeah, yeah. That's the gist of what they're for, their purpose, you could say. Well, but what really goes on, of course, is they want to have the opportunity to sell their message. And to try to get voters to, well, hopefully respond to it, but also to have some idea of who they are and what they're about. And I noticed that the American networks are doing what? They're doing an hour a night, aren't they? The free-to-air networks.
Or so, yeah.
Whereas the cable channels, obviously, are much more involved.
Well, yes. The reasoning behind that is, and I think this is to a certain extent true, is that the conventions have really become large infomercials.
Yeah.
And that the first couple of nights really don't, I'm not going to say don't matter, but don't have a whole lot of news. This is going to be slightly different because you have a really contested race it was a hard-fought contested race. So Obama is obviously going to be the nominee, but you have Clinton. And what I think people have to understand is that at many times, you know, the historic trend for conventions was that in most cases, you came into it and you did not have a presumptive nominee.
Yeah.
You know, it was smoke-filled rooms and exchanges or whatever. I mean, we have, you know, I think the probably the last really closely contested nomination fight that actually went to a convention was 1976, when Gerald Ford won over Ronald Reagan, and that it was very much counting delegate votes practically, you know, through the roll call. I believe we were sitting in your basement, in your family room over, ticking things off. Oh, here we go. And that was really the last time you had sort of any sort of drama about, you know, who would be the nominee, because I think afterwards Reagan was a shoo-in in 80, and of course, well, there was Carter, but I mean you've known since then who the nominees are going to be.
Yeah.
And I think that there's been this sort of, this really isn't news. And there's also the corporate culture within the actual networks running this, that, you know, why are we going to waste 3 hours in an evening when we can run stuff and actually make money? Yeah. Although, you know, who's watching now, that's sort of another characteristic. But it is essentially to put forth, here are our positions, we're all patting each other on the back, and our person's the greatest thing since sliced bread, and that that Luddite of that other party, you know, he'd everybody drink bread and water and chain children to factory machines and make them work, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and whip them, and he'd be for child slavery and you know, all sorts of things like this. And after a while, you just kind of go, oh, okay, yeah, no, that's really not what any of them are for.
Yeah, the convention speakers are always blatantly partisan in what they say. No, I think it's fair to say that the conventions now are basically just infomercials, and there's really not a whole lot of point in wall-to-wall coverage as they used to do.
Right.
Because, as you say, there's not a contest anymore. But one of the things I'm wondering is about if there's been an increase in sort of a insurgency in the convention time. And here's what I'm thinking of when I say that. Barack Obama announces that Joe Biden will be his running mate, and John McCain immediately starts running ads suggesting basically that he should have picked Hillary Clinton and that he didn't because he was afraid of her telling the truth. Even though we all know damn well that if he had picked Hillary Clinton, he would have run ads attacking Hillary Clinton, attacking that choice.
Oh, yes.
Also, the Republicans have set up a headquarters in Denver, and they're bringing in some of their, they think they're high flyers, like Rudy Giuliani and Mitt Romney, to try to give the Republican side of things. And they also have people out with protest signs.
Yeah, but that's pretty standard. That's become pretty standard fare.
Yeah, but McCain picking the day after Barack Obama is nominated to reveal his vice presidential running mate is a bit unusual. Traditionally, they took a day off.
Right. I think that's more the effect of the calendar than anything else, to be totally honest.
Fair
because
enough.
The problem is that next Monday is Labor Day here,
yeah.
And it's a holiday. And so you certainly don't want to. I mean, even Friday is sort of a stretch because, you know, it's a 3-day weekend, but for a lot of people, it's a 3.5-day weekend. And I think that's, you're running out of time.
Yeah.
You know, if he was going, because, you know, we sort of discussed this beforehand because, you know, Obama announced it the last weekend of the Olympics.
Yeah.
You know, because we talked about the timing of, because you're probably not going to announce during the Olympics. And I think probably the McCain camp wanted to wait and see who Obama was going to pick. So I really think that this is sort of the tail of the calendar.
Yeah,
more than sort of anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, maybe they would have pushed it forward anyway, but I think that's the problem with you're running out of days.
Yeah. Well, speaking more specifically about the Democratic Convention, of course, the media has been making a big deal about Hillary Clinton and her supporters, and will they support Barack Obama or won't they? And there's some evidence to suggest that the media is overhyping things about that, particularly because, I mean, if you think about it rationally, if you take a Democrat and you say, will you support the Democratic nominee or will you support the enemy? How many Democrats are really going to do that? I mean, I'm talking about real Democrats here, not people who are nominally Democrats.
McCain has an ad running,
yeah.
Which I guess started running today, and I'm not, I didn't quite get the entire, I believe it sounds like to me that this woman is an actual delegate to the Democratic National Convention, or is at least a strong Hillary Clinton supporter, and she is in this ad saying, "It's you know, I'm supporting John McCain, and it's okay to support him." And Hillary Clinton came on, and she says, "I am Hillary Clinton, and I do not support this ad or approve this ad," which is a disclaimer, which is a rule that was added that you have to have this voiceover of the candidate saying, you know, hi, I'm Hillary Clinton and I approve this ad. Well, that's, she came along and said she didn't approve that ad. This is always going to happen. You know, when it is this close, it's going to happen. But I think more importantly, when was the last time in the Democratic Party that it was this close?
Kerry won
early. That's, you know, 2004, Al Gore had Bill Bradley, but knocked Bill Bradley out very early. That's 2000. 1996, Clinton was running for re-election. 92, but certainly by the time of the convention, it was more or less settled. So you're talking about, say it's 1992, you're talking about 16 years, 4 cycles.
Mm.
So that's a very, very long time, and the press has an, you know, even shorter memory than the American public, so I think they're making a big deal about it because it's a story and because it hasn't happened.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a long time for essentially till practically the end, going to June going into June where it didn't get settled.
Yeah.
So I think there is part of that, and you know, who are her constituencies in some of these places, and would they be, you know, supporters of Barack Obama anyway, or you know, would they be sort of,
or were they Republicans who were just supporting Hillary because she was a woman, or there's any number of scenarios that could be playing out here. But one of the things about this whole thing is it's very evident that the McCain campaign is running a very cynical ad campaign right now, trying to split the differences among some of the hardcore Hillary supporters. And I really do hope that the Hillary supporters are smart enough to realize that he's playing them like a fiddle. And he is trying to exploit their passions, exploit their whatever hard feelings that they have left from the campaign in an attempt to try to divide the Democrats. And he doesn't give a shit about Hillary Clinton or her supporters or their issues, even for that matter. I don't know. I mean, the media, I think, has given McCain a bit of a free ride on this. They could have been harder on him. I mean, they should have pointed out, for instance, that if Barack Obama had picked Hillary, that he would have been running ads against her and saying how bad that choice was. So, I don't know. I've been very disappointed in the way the media has not held John McCain accountable for the negativity of his campaigning.
I'm very disappointed in John McCain.
Oh, well, I'm past that now. I was at first. I was really disappointed. But now I'm thinking, oh, he really is just like George Bush, because Bush, Cheney, Karl Rove, they did this exact same sort of campaigning, and he's being exactly like George Bush. So
leave aside the policy stuff. You know, I mean, the John McCain who ran in 2000 wouldn't have been caught dead with some of this stuff.
No,
just wouldn't have been caught dead with it.
No.
And it's innuendo and it's character assassinations and it's whispering and. You know, when who would have reacted and wouldn't have tolerated some of this? Some of this crap. You know, there's the button that was at the Texas Republican Convention. You know, something implying that if Obama wins, will we still call it the White House?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and again, he can't be everywhere, but there's
there's two possibilities.
It's sad.
Yeah, and there's two possibilities. Either he's not in control of his own campaign, which is a worry in itself. Or he is in control of his campaign and he endorses this negative Karl Rove, George Bush sort of tactic. And that's equally worrisome, but for different reasons, because that implies that there is no substance behind his rhetoric over the past umpteen years. That all this talk about being a maverick and being a different kind of Republican, that he was lying from the start. So, I mean, he can still redeem that. He can still say, he could fire his campaign staff and say, we're going to start over again with the campaign I promised. But he's not going to do that because...
No, he's not, because it's brought him really, really close.
Yeah.
I also find what I think is interesting to me is that how the media is like, oh, this should be the Democrats' year, and why is it so close? And it's like, you know, go back and look at the last few elections, and it's been relatively close. Mm-hmm. The country is fairly evenly divided, you know, a move of a couple hundred thousand votes, and John Kerry would be running for his second term.
Mm. Or if Ohio hadn't had trouble with election officials.
Right, or if you hadn't had the Supreme Court. And it's also, it's August. You know, they trot out these polls, and it's just like, this is meaningless.
Yeah.
And also, where is this information from? Where does he lead, you know, or where is he?
Yeah.
Either one of them. Where is someone ahead? Where is somebody behind? What are the states? Because it's not, it is a national election, but at the same time, it's 50 state elections and one district election for president.
Yeah.
Since I live in the District of Columbia, and we're not a state, and
yeah.
Don't have rights as a state because we don't have elected members who can vote in Congress.
Yeah.
So,
let's shift gears just a little bit and just talk briefly about Joe Biden, because there are probably quite a few people who don't know anything about him. I've actually met Joe Biden briefly a long, 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 long time ago. I was still in university, and I think he was still a pretty new senator. And that's actually why I was looking through the journals. I was trying to see if I wrote down anything about it, but apparently I didn't think it was important enough. Because I can't find any reference to it anywhere. But mind you, I don't remember exactly when it happened either, so that's part of it. But I do remember thinking that he seemed to be all right. And in the years since, I've thought he was basically all right. And he has pretty much proven himself to just be a mainstream Democrat, as far as I can say. You know, he comes from working-class roots. He and Barack Obama are among the least wealthy members of the Senate, as compared to certain other candidates who were running for president in other parties.
Yes, and maybe only has one house.
Yes.
I think the thing that is very interesting is that his big thing was that he took Amtrak home every weekend.
Hmm.
You know, and had some very tragic things happen very early in his political career on a personal level. You know, his wife and a daughter was killed in an automobile accident, and I believe one or both of his sons were injured in it. So this was, you know, a big you know, quite a huge momentous event in his life. And I actually, because I certainly I must have been out here. I remember that, you know, vaguely recalling that. So I think he's a very straight shooter. He's not going to take the BS. When he was, especially with Iraq and especially with sort of the war on terror, very nuanced. You listened to him, and it was not. Sometimes the Republicans could take solace in what he was saying, and I'm sure there were some liberal Democrats shaking their heads. But he seems to be very straightforward in that. Here's what I think. Here are my views. Here's what I think we've got to do. Here's what we have to consider. I mean, a lot of his stuff on Iraq, I think, was very straightforward and very on point. And
he originally voted for the Iraq thing, as most of the senators did, but he also then later came back and said it was a mistake to have done that, which, of course, Hillary has not done.
Yeah, but then she was trying to finesse a position, so I can understand that to a certain extent. I think he's a very good choice. I think they work very well together. Obama is the visionary, and Biden is sort of the get down in the trenches and roll up your sleeves. And that's not to say that Barack Obama isn't, but it's a very different sort of dynamic, you know. Where Obama's very lofty and his speeches are, you know, energizing people, and Biden is in a similar way, but sort of on a more right way to describe, sort of on a day to day type basis. You know, this is how it affects you. I understand how this affects your person. I also thought it was quite interesting. He's on his way out to the convention, or I think he was, and so he said goodbye to all of the people on Amtrak that every Friday he takes the train back to Delaware, and so they saw him. So it's sort of a common type touch. I think Obama has the common type touch as well, but it's sort of, and I don't know quite the right way to describe how it is different, but there is a difference there.
Yeah.
So I think it's a really good choice.
Yeah, I was very pleased with it, I have to say, because there were some of the names that were being bandied about. I quite frankly would have had trouble being at all enthusiastic about the Democratic ticket, like if he'd picked Sam Nunn, for instance, who I despise.
Yeah, Sam Nunn has been so out of the political process. I never understood. Putting aside sort of some of the things that he's done, it's just like, why would you pick this guy?
Yeah, I actually heard one of the pundits say, and I actually think this one was really spot on, that Sam Nunn is sort of an elder statesman of the party, and he's the sort of person who has to be on a list, even if you're not going to seriously consider him. He has to be mentioned because, you know, respect for his position as an old timer in the party and all that. That I think that's probably all it was. I don't think anybody was ever seriously considering him because for all those reasons you say, and he's a divisive figure.
Yeah.
And he there's no way that he could bring the party together, much less the country. No, I think it's an excellent choice. I'm fully supportive of it. And we'll see what they can maximize out of that in the upcoming convention, I suppose. Well, I think we need to start moving towards the wrap-up stage.
Okay, and, that's a good idea.
One of the things that we've talked about is that we're going to go over comments, if any, to this episode in the next one that we do together rather than have me go over it in the next ordinary one that I do in between and stuff like that. So if you do comment on this episode, we'll go over them next week. But I actually have a phone message from Tom the Ramble Redhead that I'm going to play now, and I will do that.
Hey, Arthur and Jason. Just want to leave you a quick message to let you know that I listened to your latest political episode, and I thought it was fantastic, and I just loved your insight on the VP picks, and I especially love Jason's comment about Condoleezza Roth, and picking her would be, and the way he described it, it was just fantastic. So I just thought it was so funny, and I have to agree with Ryan. Definitely you two have helped make this political process even more invigorating, to make me want to get part of it and tell my friends about who they hopefully will not vote for, a.k.a. McCain. But I just think it's amazing how you guys can talk about all these things in such a great, insightful way. So I just want to thank you for all your hard work, and I'm looking forward to future shows. So keep it up, and keep on listening to TheRambleRedhead.com. Bye.
Well, thanks for that, Tom. That's very nice of you.
Yes, I totally agree. I think it's something we've always been interested in, the two of us, for a very, very long time. And so it's just always fun to talk about.
Well, thanks again for that, Tom. And, of course, anyone is welcome to leave a message on the listener line, and the complete contact details will be at the end of this episode. And we will play it on the next one that we do together, which is 1 week from today.
Yes. Any comments, any questions, any
questions? Good point.
Things that people might not understand, which we might be able to shed light on, or not, as the case may be,
maybe
we will be more than happy to take it under consideration.
So. Yeah. Nicely put. Yes. Okay. Well, thanks, everyone, for joining us, and we'll be back again next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.
See you then.
Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. listener line on 206-339-8413. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.